All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are live. Welcome, everyone. We've got an interesting show today. It's a little bit delayed. We were supposed to do it last week, and I had internet problems, and then I actually got suspended from Twitter for 7 days for saying that Hitler should be venerated. It was considered violent speech, which is just absurd. Very obvious. They don't want us talking about specifically that figure, so I'm sure it's something we'll talk about today, but we're joined with the Based Barber. Now, I don't know if you guys are familiar with him. He had made the rounds on Twitter. If you guys go on my Twitter page right now, I uploaded one of his clips that went crazy viral. I think it had like 3 or 4 million views on it, where he was basically doing some guy's hair and kind of telling him about the Holocaust, which is a really interesting combination of things that you certainly don't see often. So, welcome, brother. Why don't you introduce yourself to the chat room a little bit, kind of let the people know who you are, and we'll kind of kick into the interview.
So basically, man, I'm just a barber, bro. I'm a barber. I talk a lot of shit with my clients, and yeah, man. So one of my buddies, he was really pro Israel, and I was deep into the Holocaust stuff at the time, you know. So I was like, "Yo, you down to record today, man?" He was like, "Yeah, man, for sure." This is one of my really good friends, and yeah, we just went straight into it, and I started hitting him with all the facts. And he was, you know, I would tell him in the middle of the conversation, just ChatGPT, you know, check it out, whatever. And he was just mind blown, man. I saw the reaction. I was like, damn, it's a good video. So I clipped it up and I threw it out there. And just one random day, a bunch of people started texting me, like, "Yo, man, I seen you on Twitter laughing and shit." Like, "Yo, it's crazy." And yeah, man, I mean, I've been into all this, you know, multiple different, I guess, started with theories, you know, the Sandy Hooks and all those things, and 9/11 and politics and all different kind of things. And recently, I want to say the last like probably about 2 years, I've gone pretty deep into the Holocaust stuff and Hitler, and yeah, I got a little bit obsessed with all of that stuff, and yeah, it clarifies a lot. It clarifies a lot about everything else. So yeah, man, we're here now.
Yeah, so I guess just to start maybe on your career path background first to kind of meld these things together, how did you get into being a barber? Is this something that you aspired for when you were younger? Did you just kind of fall into it? How did you kind of come to this?
Man, so I mean, I've been cutting hair since I was 12. I'm 35 now, so yeah, it's been a while. So actually, one of my buddies, yeah, so this is how it happened. Everything just happens the way it happens, right? So one of my buddies had a messed up haircut one day, and I was like making fun of him. And we're 12 years old, man, and he was like, "Hey, man, if you'd say it's so messed up, can you fix it?" So I was like, "Well, I'll fix it," you know, just being overconfident. And we walked a couple miles. We bought a little piece of shit machine. I didn't know anything about cutting hair whatsoever, but you know, at this point, I gotta like hype myself up and figure it out. So I sat there for hours, man, just trying to figure it out. I was always an artist and stuff like that. And I thought I figured it out, I guess. And then, you know, we went to a party at night, and he was setting everyone like, "Oh, look, you just cut my hair," whatever. So everyone was giving me props, thinking it was good. It was probably horrible. And you know, at that point, I'm like, "Oh, I'm a barber," you know. And 12 years old, I started making money. I started working at a barber shop at like 13. I did a bunch of other things as well, but I would always come back to cutting hair, man, you know. And then eventually, I just figured like, I got to do this in a different way, you know. So I wanted, when I was into like the personal development and all those things, and reading a lot, I got into more of how can I give people a better experience, you know. I'll charge more and I'll do a more personalized experience and things like that. And I got myself like a bigger space, and it's more personable, and it's pretty much like a huge man cave, man. And you know, so I switched up the experience a little bit, and it's been fun, man. You know, I do a lot of things here, different. We do events and a couple different things, and yeah, man. You know, it's what I've known forever, and it's a good way to pass certain messages, and I guess what people say, wake people up, you know.
Yeah, so now to go to maybe the fun side of the conversation, how did you learn? I mean, the Holocaust is obviously a big step. So, how did you learn about the Jewish problem? How did you kind of get yourself into these topics and these pieces? To obviously, if you're telling people at your shop, you have to have some kind of knowledge on them. So how'd you start to pick up on this knowledge?
I believe it was, I mean, bro, it's like I said, going back to every conspiracy, you know, 9/11 goes back to Jews and Israel. And, then also just understanding everyone, when they own the media, Hollywood, you know, you start going into the Illuminati's and the Freemasonry's, and everything just leads back to the same. And back then I thought it was a religion. And then the more you start going into it and you start understanding its ethnicity and you track that a little bit. I haven't gone back too far into like the deep, deep history. I'm still trying to like, I guess, process all of this stuff. But yeah, it's just, it's like a funnel, man. It goes always to the same perpetrators. And then I remember when Kanye came out, he came with that tweet, the DEFCON tweet. I had a lot of people talking shit. Oh, this guy's anti-Semitic. I'm like, man, I don't know. This doesn't sound too anti-Semitic. It sounds pretty reasonable. And I went, you know, I started going even deeper and deeper. And then I would argue with one of my buddies. He's like very pro-Israel and all that shit. And it just forces me to go deeper into these topics. And I ended up falling into the David Irvings and David Coles and all of those guys. And yeah, and ChatGPT, man, you know, once ChatGPT came out, I just started going really hard with that. And I pretty much what one of my buddy calls is I waterboard it, you know, and I try to get it to give me the most accurate information without all the fluff that it normally wants to give you. And, you know, at the end of the day, I still don't know exactly what happened, right? I don't know if anybody does, but I have a better understanding than what's previously given to us, you know, and all the bullshit that's been given to us since it happened, basically. So
yeah, it sure as hell wasn't 6 million, and definitely wasn't any masturbation machines. So egregious. So now the really interesting piece is, you know, I've been to barbershops, and well, as you can see, I cut my own now. It doesn't look all that great, but I've been to barbershops, and you know, the conversations are typically, how's the wife? How's the weather? You know, it's very bland, right? Yeah. I'll tell you, I probably would be going to a barber if we were going to be talking about the Jews the whole time. I think I would definitely be going. So what gave you this idea to start basically pushing these ideas onto your clients? Was that something that, like, before maybe you answer that question, was this something that you were nervous to do? Were you excited to do something like that? Because it's a very interesting thing, and not a lot of people would have the balls to kind of start confronting these topics, you know, anywhere, let alone in their business. I think that's something very interesting.
So one thing, I think I'm very fortunate that since I've been doing this for long, a lot of my clients are pretty much friends now, or close associates at least. And I used to work at a barbershop that had like 13 other barbers, and, you know, 13 barbers, 13 clients, let's say another 10 people waiting. It was jam packed all day. You know, it's 30 people in a room. And I was a guy that was talking all the crazy shit. You know, let's track it back. Let's see. I would say the whole Sandy Hooks and yeah, the school shootings and shit like that. You know, those are the ones that really got my attention. And, you know, I just, man, ever since I was a kid, I was always, my parents used to say, oh, you should be a fucking lawyer. All you do is argue. All you do is you're a contrarian, you know, you want to go against everything. But it wasn't that. I just wasn't, you know, it wasn't good enough for me when people just gave me this bullshit surface level answer. And then when you ask the next question, oh, I don't know. It's just like that. It's not like that. It's not enough for me. You know, thank God now we have like AI and shit like that we could just go and investigate our own. So I used to read a lot, man, and watch a lot of YouTube and stuff like that. So I had a bunch of buddies that thought I was fucking crazy. And it was the Trump era, too. I remember the Trump era. You know, oh, that guy's racist. That guy's this. That guy's that. And it was like, man, like, you're listening to fucking CNN. You know, and then barbershops tend to be very liberal. So, or at least that culture, right? It's lower-end urban culture a lot of the times. So it was a lot of the liberal shit that you're hearing, you know, the influence, man, it's how it works. So, and I started reading up on influence and subconscious programming and things like that. And it just got me to understand, like, to zoom out a little bit and see exactly how these people are pulling strings to shape our interpretation of things. So then it became very clear. You know, the clearer it gets, the easier it is to like show it to people because I know exactly where to look. So then I would bring these things up, and I was a little bit more radical at the time. I was a little more extreme, black or white thinker. A little more aggressive. I used to start a lot of arguments. Now I've learned how to, it's been about, I would say 9 years of bringing up these rough topics with people. So I've learned how to like, kind of like ease into it and see where people are and meet them where they're at. And then like hit them with a little shocker. And then, you know, I guess the social skills that you develop after doing this for a while. And, yeah, man, it would get crazy. And it would be literally me against 30 people. And I guess I got comfortable in that. And because I wouldn't argue, even till today, like, I'm not going to argue something or debate anything that I'm unaware of. If I don't know what I'm talking about, I'm not going to talk about it. I mean, I'm willing to talk about it, and I would ask questions and things like that, or bring up the things that I know. But I'm not going to argue with someone that knows what they're talking about if I don't know anything on the topic. So before I would bring things up, I would go all the way deep into it, then bring it up, test the waters, and then we could have to play the game, you know. And I guess I got comfortable in that, and it started actually drawing people's attention. People would come in and start asking me, "Hey, man, what'd you read about this? Oh, what about this?" And you know, I've had pages on these things, and like that's gotten decent amount of traction and things like that. And it, you know, people gravitate towards it because I do feel like I have inclination to finding the truth. I don't want to be right. I'm not trying to prove anything to anybody. I'm not trying to change anyone's mind. It's really meaningless to me. I want to know what the truth is, you know? And if I see somebody that I care about walking around, you know, with a complete fabrication of truth, I'd rather like, you know, help them out with that. Right. Cause I would like someone to do that for me. So, I guess I got comfortable in that, man. And then when I get obsessed with a topic and I'm going to talk their ear off about it, you know? So yeah, I got comfortable with it. And then I started hearing people like, "Oh man, I told my buddy about this." And seeing people converting over the years it's amazing, man. And then that's when you realize like, oh shit, like I have a good platform for this. You know, if I see, say 50 people a week or whatever, 200 a month, I mean, that's 200 people a month that I'm like, able to deconstruct rather than build on top of. I don't want to, like I said, I don't want to change your minds. I'd rather just remove all the bullshit programming and help them. You know, I think it translates into their lives, you know, in a good way.
Yeah, yeah. And you bring up a really good point about, you know, when you first learn these things, you're more hard-headed in your approach, rough around the edges. I had the same mistake with my family. You know, I'm all excited. I learn all this stuff. And, like, you know, being young, I'm like 23 when I learned all this. And I'm like, how am I? I have all these people in my family that are, like, 10 years older, 20, 30 years older than I am. They didn't know any of this. They haven't heard any. Like, how did I hear none of this growing up? So, like, you know, excitement got the best of me. And I'm running around. I'm going to dinner with my families. And I'm pushing the shit down their throats. And I'm talking about the Holocaust and Marxism and all this. And it's just going so far over their heads. You definitely learn over time how to be more subtle and more reasonable in the conversation. You can actually see when someone starts to turn off. Like, yeah. when they're listening to you and they're conversing, and then the cognitive dissonance, their eyes like glaze over, and you can just tell they're ready to stop talking at that point. And then you kind of learn to reel it back a little bit and kind of pick again at a later time. It's a very interesting process. So I'm curious, in this process of your learning and going through this, did you ever lose any friends or any customers from trying to talk about these ideas?
I think I've lost a couple, man. So another thing I'm very fortunate about is I have a lot of clientele. So I don't know if it's, you know, I've probably drawn a lot of new clients. Well, I know I have actually, because a lot of my clientele, they come not only for the haircut, not only for the, you know, the space or the vibe or whatever you want to call it, but also for the conversations. And it's all part of the package, you know? So I do get new clients all the time that, that come in for the experience, right? But over the years, I think during COVID, I probably lost a few. COVID was a big one, the vaccines and all that shit. I remember people being terrified, man. You know, I had a client that would like tape his mask to his face, and it was pretty bad, man. You know, so there was a few of them, actually. There was a few of them, and some of them like reasonable. You know, I know people that had compromised immune systems and shit like that. So I get that, you know. But there was other people that were like in line, man. People I know, really healthy people that, you know, were dying for the vaccine. You know, they had natural immunity and dying for the vaccine. So it would get pretty rough. But like I said, most people that come in here are friends of mine. So for me to lose somebody, it's pretty rare, because I don't go through that aggressive. I don't have that aggressive approach anymore. So, yeah, I think I lost maybe one or two that I could remember that I probably never saw again, with maybe some Trump stuff or something like that. You know, back then it was a little more less obvious that he was a Jewish puppet.
Yeah, well, that's not bad. Two or three isn't terrible, especially if you're doing this consistently, you know. And I do agree with COVID. That was a really hard one specifically, and that's when I first started waking up, and everything was so polarized. I mean, it was like you can't even say, you know, one opinion without people associating like 10 other things to you. You know, you're like, oh, I'm not really big on the vaccines. Like, oh, now you're an anti-vaxxer, you're anti-masker, you're like a terrorist in their eyes, and you're a Trump supporter. And it's like, well, I'm not a Trump supporter. I mean, it's kind of ridiculous. Like, just because I don't think the vaccine's good doesn't mean I like. Actually, Trump's the guy that pushed him out there. So it just shows how fucking stupid the mindset is.
Yeah, it was crazy, man. That was a fucking scary time, bro. Just shows how easily they could just group us up and move us around, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's this typical Jewish divide and conquer, right? You're in camp A or you're in camp B. And if you're in camp C, it's even harder, because both camps outcast you for different reasons, right? And that's kind of where we're at. We're like anti-Jew camp is like camp C, right? It's the real concentration camp, and we're sitting here like, dude, I mean, they're behind this, they're behind that, on either side, wherever you look, and these people are just so incapable of seeing it. You know, just look at Israel-Palestine, right? You have the right, which they think that it's, well, this is good, actually. Israel's God's chosen people, and we have to help them, you know, do this genocide. And on the opposite side of the field, you've got these leftists that are like, oh, it's white colonials that are, you know, killing off brown people right now. It's so crazy. So I'm curious for you, do you ever touch on Israel-Palestine, what's going on there in your conversations? And if you do, how do people receive that? Do you ever get, you know, backlash or anything odd from people?
Yeah, I mean, I pretty much touch on everything, bro. Everything that's happening. I mean, sometimes I stay away from it. You know, I get into my spirituality stuff and, you know, self-exploration and all that stuff. But for the most part, I have, you know, right now I have Trump talking on the TV. So there's always like, I see headlines and stuff. So I keep up with it. Israel-Palestine is a huge one. I think so. It's funny because, like I said, in 2016, I was probably like, I don't consider myself ever liberal or Republican or anything like that, conservative. But it's, you know, obviously Republicans had 90% logic. You know, up until now, from I would say about 2016, everything has been pretty logical on their end for the most part. Until now, it's like going off the deep end. But it's a pendulum swing. It's going to happen regardless. But yeah, I think the hard part is now, you know, it's some people perceive it as we're siding with the liberals. And it's like, fuck, you know, it's like, damn, this is not what, you know, this is not. You know, the whole liberal movement, it's just gone to complete shit for the last decade. So now the pendulum is swinging. Yeah, you have both sides of the spectrum. You know, the far, far right fucking hates the Jews. The far, far left hates the Jews, you know. And it's like, it's just like the black hole fucking. But, you know, so we talk about the Palestine stuff. And And yeah, so automatically, if you criticize what Israel's doing to Palestine, automatically you're a Hamas supporter or you're a radical liberal. Or, you know, so I think, like I said, everyone was liberal. I've seen everyone converting. Now, I would say 90% of my clientele was liberal in 2016. I would say 95% are conservative today. And it's more or less the same people. You know, with, give or take a few, for the most part, it's almost all the same people. So it's interesting. It's interesting to see that. So now these guys that are hyper, you know, Republican, now they're looking at this Israel thing and they're like, oh no, but Trump and J.D. Vance and fucking Elon and all these guys are super fucking Israel supporters. So Israel's our greatest ally. We love Israel. Israel's very similar to us and they're fucking great. You know, they're our eyes in the Middle East and they're, you know, they're not like these radical Muslims that are blowing shit up and everybody's a terrorist and they're the reasonable ones in the Middle East. Of course we have to support them. And that's the narrative, you know? So when you bring up like, man, have you seen, you know, what they're doing? It's like, oh no, but October 7th. And it's like, have you gone into October 7th? Do you know anything about October 7th? Have you seen, like, you know, you just point out the very obvious inconsistencies about it. And, you know, I've like I said, man, I've converted a lot of people into at least zooming out. Because the thing is that these narratives and this polarity of politics, it's easy to just want to side with a team. You know, you could just fall into it because they're welcoming you with open arms. So it feels comfortable to, no, I agree with all these guys. This is my tribe, you know? So nobody wants to be ostracized from the tribe. So it just is what it is. It's hard to break that. So what I encourage, instead of people just, oh, go against Israel, instead of encouraging them to go against Israel, I'll just tell them, like, hey, man, zoom out. Look at what's happening. Look at every other fucking war. And you realize that most things are built off of false flags. And, you know, you engage in things to create a war because, you know, it's the problem, reaction, solution. You know, it's the same fucking tactic every goddamn time. So once you can zoom out and you see all of these things, you see the patterns very clearly. So, yeah, man, I've opened a lot of people's eyes to at least looking at it more objectively rather than black and white and jumping from side to side so easily, you know?
Yeah, that's good. And that's important, too, is to get people out of this, well, this left-right paradigm, right, where they're following a party. Because like you said, you know, my grandfather's a really good example. He grew up, he was like a lifelong Democrat. Then Obama got in, and he's like, yeah, I'm not voting for a black dude to run my country. So then he becomes a Republican, and he's like, oh, now my country's going to be better if it's Republican. It's like, yeah, but you're not even actually switching based on policy or ideology. Like, it's just like, oh, that side's not doing things I like right now. I'm just going to go to this side. It's a very, like lazy kind of a mindset on these things. And the average modern conservative, they're like what a liberal was like 10 years ago, right? Like they're like, oh, as long as Lady MAGA is voting Trump, I'm cool with Lady MAGA. It's like, no, like I don't want any of these fucking trannies out here, especially not publicly. Like, why are we promoting this nonsense? So I think it's crucial to pull these people out of this like party game that they're playing, you know?
Yeah, like you said, man, it's lazy. It's very lazy, but I guess you know, I always try to even look into or put myself in the shoes of the elites, right? The average person is lazy. The average person is in probably not the smartest, right? And we could go into why that is or whatever, conditioning and environment or whatever. But the average person wants to be told what to do. And I guess part of it has to be that way. If not, shit doesn't get done, right? So it's fucked up, man, but like we're the outliers and maybe it's just meant to be that way. And everybody else just has to fall into their little tribe and it works best that way. It's worked best that way up until now, I would say. And now I think more and more people, you know, the age of information where we have everything in our pocket, man. Like even back, like I said, Sandy Hook days, you know, it was 2012, 13. Like, you would have to wait and bust a mission to go onto YouTube and, you know, look up these videos, and the next day it's taken down and screenshot certain things, and it was a pain in the ass. Now it's like, man, I could look shit up. It's going to be on Twitter, or it's going to be on Rumble, or it's going to be on something else, and there's a paper trail of everything, man. So if people don't want to know what the fuck is going on, like, you're just being lazy, bro. Because you have the ultimate tool in your pocket at all fucking times. So if you watch a reel and it sounds incredible, it sounds fucking crazy and eye-opening, and you just share that shit without even looking into it, like, first thing I do is I watch something, I'm like, wow, that's fucking crazy. All right, ChatGPT, Grok, fucking, you know, Google, like, go through your sources, man. Try to figure out what the real truth is, because anybody could be doing, you know. There's also the psyops. So now people are getting fucked with that. And it's interesting, man. It's interesting. And it seems like there's levels of it. And hopefully it's changing. It seems like it's changing. It seems like more and more people are gravitating towards verifying information and I guess picking it apart to figure out what the actual truth is, rather than just gravitating towards a side or black and white thinking.
Yeah, you know, and you even have that in the camp of people that fully learn these things, right? When they learn about the Jews and they realize they're behind everything, they take it to, like, you know, like a next level extreme, where it's like all that they can see is, I don't want to say it's all, everything they see is Jewish, because everything really is Jewish, right? It's not to like demean that piece. It's just, I guess it's just how they react to it. They become like, it's the only thing that they can focus themselves on, the only thing, and they're not doing it level-headedly, right? They're kind of what we were discussing earlier. When you first kind of pick up on these things, your initial reaction is you just, like, go to the mountaintops and scream out, it's the fucking Jews, guys. And obviously that does not garner the best reactions. I made that mistake quite a few times. I lost some family and friends for sure in that route.
The funny thing is, you ask a lot of these people that get hurt by it, right? Like, how many Jews do you know? And they're usually like, none. Like, you know, why? It's weird. Like, I know a couple of Jews, right? Like, I know people that have found out later that they're like a fourth Jewish or some shit like that, right? But I don't know any, like, fucking Jews. You know, it's funny that there's some of my friends make me laugh, because there's a Jewish church that's, like, literally a block away. And, bro, this shit gets filled, man. And I come in here and I'm like, man, my buddies will show up here and they're like, yo, these guys are out to get you, out fucking around. But it's like, those are the only fucking Jews I ever see. You know, you go to Miami Beach and you'll see them walking around and shit. And man, I don't think that even those guys know what the fuck is going on, at least consciously, right? But there is a subconscious energy of there's something happening here. And I think a lot of it is cultural. It's possible there's a genetic trait here that I would like for people to, you know, when you start talking about these, like, genetic differences between races, people get, you know, scared right away, right? They're like, oh no, that's fucking racist. That's racist. But it's strange, because if we actually researched these things and we broke these things down, we'd be able to actually synchronize better in a way, you know, on this planet, right? This planet, at the end of the day, it's going to have us on it. All of us, all fucking Chinese people, everyone is here to stay, right? For now, at least. And we have to, like, kind of vibrate on one big ass frequency, right? So now, is the solution fucking throwing everybody into one country? Maybe not, right? It doesn't look like that. But whatever the case is, you know, studying our inherent differences will probably help us, you know, be more in sync on this planet, at least, right? But the second you say that, it's like, oh, this guy's a fucking psychopath, eugenicist, or some crazy shit like that. And it's like, bro, you know, you could study a chimpanzee and an ape, and you could study a fucking orangutan, and you could study all different types of breeds of dogs, and you could do all of that shit. And that's completely fine and fucking ethical. But the second you say, man, do Jews have some kind of, you know, inherent trait that's, oh, whoa, whoa, chill out, you fucking anti-Semite. Like, look, man, you know, I'm Hispanic, I'm Cuban. And bro, I make fun of Cubans more than anybody. You know what I mean? Like, I know all the fucking problems that Cubans have. Now, is it cultural? Is it, we're Spaniard, you know? So maybe, I don't know. But let's fucking do this research, you know? What do black people have? What do white people have? We know, you know, crime rates and all this other shit, right? But a lot of that could be cultural. It could be inherent. It could be, but let's figure this shit out, and it could help us all, including the race that we're specifically talking about at the time. So I don't know, man. It's weird. I think we need to do more of this in order to figure this shit out. Because, like you said, man, people, you hear about this, and I was just telling somebody today that in this space, right? You get into this, and it's like, oh fuck, the Holocaust is fake. Jews run everything. You know, we're Israel's bitch. Blah blah blah, whatever. And then you connect all the dots, and you're like, damn, the Jews run the whole fucking West. Okay, cool. Then some people see it as, damn, right, how do we fix this? How do we get our country back? How do we, whatever, whatever, whatever. And then some people are like fucking sitting there in a corner as a victim, like, oh, the Jews ruined my life. And it's like, bro, go have a good fucking life. You can still have a good fucking life while you're working in the background. You know what I mean? Like, try to figure this shit out as a unit, but you can't be a victim, bro. At the end of the day, you can't be a fucking victim. Like you said, these people, that's where the radical left comes in, and they're burning shit down, burning down their own shit. It's like, yo, come on, man. You know, what are we doing here? Now, if everybody could unite, including Jews, I've seen Jews that are fucking against a lot of this shit, whether it's real or not, I don't know, but I've seen it. And it's like, yo, man, this is what we need, though. You look at Dave Smith and shit like that. I don't know if it's real, but it's, let's see. Let's figure it out. You know what I mean? I don't think this whole, like, yo, I want to fucking kill all these motherfuckers, and I don't know if that works, man. You know what I mean? I don't know what it is. Maybe send them all to Israel, or I don't know what the actual solution is. But I think living in that gray is probably more beneficial than, like, having the solution, the final solution, you know? Having that final solution. I don't know, man. I think it'll evolve as we go. We'll start figuring it out, and everybody has new ideas, and we'll see what the solution to this shit is, man. But, you know, a lot of people thought it was getting better, and it's getting better as in the people are realizing more. But, I mean, it's looking like our country is more and more controlled by the minute, so.
Yeah, you know, the masses are picking this up, and it's becoming like a conversation piece, but we're not exactly seeing, you know, political progress or any kind of social change in the country at the moment. I think it's going to be quite a while until we see any of that, because the people, essentially, if you are in power at this point, the Jews want you there. You know, they don't just allow people to get into power. They have, you know, some kind of blackmail or, you know, financial leverage or whatever the case may be over 90% of the people that are in these positions. You know, and this genetic piece is super crucial, because one of the biggest problems and why the average person has such a hard time, you know, understanding this Jewish problem is they view Jews as white people, just with a different religion. And this is one of the most dangerous things. I see it. I see white people that have that thought process. I see black people that have that thought process. Pretty much everybody is under this general notion that Jews are just white guys, but they have a different religious faith that's a little bit weirder, right? And it's there is this genetic aspect that is so crucial to understand here. And you were talking earlier, you know, it might not be that every 100% of Jews are on board with this, but it's 80, 90, you know, it's a large percent, large enough that the smaller percent is so minuscule and meaningless in the grand scheme. And then additionally, Hitler talks about this in Mein Kampf, and it's such a beautiful assessment, but he compares them to like buffalo or horses, and their survival instinct. When you look at buffalo will, they'll, you know, go all over the place. They walk by themselves. They're very independent creatures. But the second that, like, a wolf comes, or, you know, a lion or something like that is to come across this group, they all of a sudden come together like this, and they run in one massive herd together. They conglomerate with each other. And Hitler kind of talks about this, that this is how the Jew acts, right? So even if they aren't all consciously in on this game of pushing for world dominion, the second that they see some kind of critique of Israel or critique of Jews or denial of the Holocaust, their instant reaction is to just atrophy to all of these other Jews and collectivize like this adhesive and just stand up as a Jew, just be the Jew, you know? And that's kind of, it creates a hard piece, you know, where even if, you know, we want to talk about like a proverbial good Jew that is against these things, for how long? You know, like, they might be against the actions of Israel, but how long are they going to maintain being against what really is just collective Jewish behavior. It's like suicidal for them to be against that, right? They half of them will get called a self-hating Jew and actually excommunicated out of their own people. You know, they won't even be considered a Jew anymore. So there's no real incentive for them to do that. There's actually the opposite. So it's not even like this moral dilemma of good Jew or bad Jew, but it's rather, it's just nature. Naturally, their survival instinct is to collectivize and stick with their own in times of danger. And well, I think that's what's going to end up happening with a lot of these anti-Israel Jews.
Do you think that that happens with every race, or do you think it's only them, or mainly them, or it's easier for them because of this sense of pride of chosen one? Or
yeah, it's a good question. I think other races are capable of this. But I don't think it's as strong in other races as it is with Jews, because the thing is how Jews have lived civilizationally for like 2,000 years. So when you look at like, you know, the Spaniards or the French or the Germans or whatever, they have their little civilization. You know, they're nomadic at first until they build their boundaries and they build their villages and stuff. And once they do and they live in what is called civilization, they become really independent, right? And they have their spot, they have their town, their village, their family, and they no longer feel like they need to stand up for the German that's eight villages over anymore, right? Because it's not a matter of life and death, survival. However, Jews throughout all of time, they never had those civilizations. They never had this kind of individual character that was taken on by each Jew, right? So their only way to survive when... Let's just kind of run an analogy here. Let's say they go into Europe, the first time they were ever in Europe, and they come into England, and let's just say 10 of the Jews are doing bad things. There's like 5,000 of them there, and just 10 of them are doing bad things. But those things are so bad that the English people get really pissed about it, and they go, look what these Jews are doing. This is terrible. Now, naturally, the result is those Jews are going to get removed out of the country like they always have. So now the 4,990 Jews who aren't doing anything wrong, they want to stay in the country. So they have to stick with those other Jews in order to go against that narrative on the Jews, right? And they have to complain about anti-Semitism and, you know, pogroms and things like this as like a survival reaction. Meanwhile, other groups of people, because they have their own civilization, they don't have this fear of being removed from somewhere or having to kind of resettle somewhere else and figure things out. So I think it's just stronger in them. I wouldn't say it's not present in other groups, but it's super prevalent with Jews in a way that it isn't with other groups.
It seems like they have a more of a collective value system than other races, right? Like other races, if you look at everyone else, I mean, shit, I told you, I'm Hispanic, man, and I know fucking tons of different Hispanics with different views and ideologies and values and all kind of different, completely different. Same thing with white people, same thing with black people. Asians are a little more similar, but even that, or not necessarily Asians, but depending on the country, right? Like I would say Japanese people, I don't know many, but from the little I know of Japanese people, I would say they all have a similar culture. I've been to like Thailand and stuff like that. Thai people seem to have a very similar culture, but yeah, I agree. I think what you're saying is if let's say Thai people, you know, they're in a town and a few of them are doing something wrong, I think they'd side with the rest of the people, the good ones would side with the rest of the people to condemn the small group that are doing the wrongdoings. And the Jews won't, is basically what you're... That makes sense. It makes sense. But it could be because of... it's almost like an entitlement. Feels like an entitlement. So that's why I mean culturally, right? I think culturally there's something very, very wrong in the sense that there's a lot of things that have been done right as well, right? Because you build a sense of self-importance in a sense, I guess. Like there's things that we could applaud, I guess. But then there's so many things that it's like, man, like you're not seeing the outcomes of this. And my thing is like, read the room, man. You know, if you're going to share society with people and certain civilizations, you got to understand what the other people think of you. You know, at the end of the day, it's like, fuck what everybody thinks, right? But it's not. Not if you want to live peacefully. If you're doing everybody wrong and you want to act above everyone, which they've made it into certain positions that they have power over everyone, which is fine. But, you know, at the end of the day, you got to cooperate. If not, you're going to get this response. And you can't just push it away with, oh, anti-Semitism. That shit was fucking insane to me. Anti-Semitism. You know, it's like, I don't think this is the way it's going to work, man. It's the same thing with the whole BLM thing. All it did, who told me yesterday, man? Someone told me yesterday. Fuck, I can't remember who it was. Told me yesterday, like, I think this black, like, you know, it pushed black people even further. It made people more racist. Like, BLM made people more racist. The whole goal and purpose of BLM was to end racism and all this bullshit. And it just made it worse. Like, so it's the same thing with the anti-Semitism, the ADL, and all this bullshit. You're pushing people further away because we see the bullshit. We can see it so fucking clear that, you work with everyone, man. If you're doing something that people don't like, if I'm implementing things in my household that my kids are fucking being traumatized, that they don't like it, and I'm making them work too hard or whatever, I want my kids to be able to tell me, hey, look, Dad, like, this is fucked up. So I'm going to switch it up a little bit, right? I don't want my, like, I have to live amongst, it's the same thing as a civilization. Like, I just don't understand how it's victimization, man. It's built in their culture somewhere. And I want to say it started with the Holocaust, but no way. It's been 109 times before that, or 108 times before that. So, yeah, there's a clear pattern here. And hopefully something could get into it to kind of deconstruct that or make them aware of it, at least if they're not. Because, yeah, it's not looking good, man, at least the direction we're going with this.
Yeah, and I don't think they're ever going to be made aware of it, because I do think there is that self-entitlement that they have. I mean, look at, funny enough, the term Final Solution, right? This actually comes from a National Socialist statesman who wrote an article titled The Final Solution to the Jewish Problem. And in it, he actually, it's so funny, because he actually explicitly states that he is against extermination, because he thinks that would be barbaric and un-German. So the Jews have inverted that as well. But he also says that they need to go to Madagascar. And the reason he suggests Madagascar is because he says if they go to Palestine, the Arabs don't want them there either. So they're going to cause problems with the Arabs the same way they're causing with us. It's not going to be any different. And the Jews, they had to have their way. They had to insist that they go there. Well, now we're seeing the havoc that's coming from that. But you are right. You know, there is this half and half. There's the cultural aspect and the genetic aspect, right? Again, the genetic has that kind of biological response, which is that survival instinct, in the same way that, like, different animals have different survival instincts, right? Like, the ostrich just sticks its head in the ground, or the possum plays dead. Or, you know, other animals, they attack. You know, there's just kind of that different survival instinct that's present in each group of people. And then there is, again, this nurtured culture of you are God's chosen. You are the greatest. You know, this Jewish term of chutzpah, where they, you know, believe that they're better than everybody. And they have this, like, the way they can just incessantly lie to your face so confidently without, you know, getting upset about it or something. Or one of the interesting ones is Jews can't blush. I don't know if you know that. They physically can't blush.
Get the
You ever see a Jew blush?
Oh, boy, bro. No.
They can't. You ever see a Jew's face get red and blush? They can't blush. Genetically, they can't. They cannot blush.
Out of here, man.
It goes to show how...
That's crazy.
You know,
that's
how much of a thing we're dealing with here, where, you know, you do something wrong in public and your instant reaction is just, you kind of get red, like, oh, shit, I fucked up, you know, like, oh, I put that thing in the wrong spot, or I forgot to pay for this item or whatever. Jews, their reaction isn't to go, oh, shit, I forgot to pay for that and, like, feel bad. It's to just go, well, idiots didn't catch me, you know, and just keep rolling the fucking cart out of the store. They don't think twice about it, but... Yeah, there
is that one up, man. That's fucking hilarious, bro.
There is quite a combination here of nurture and nature, and I think because their main power structure where they get their intellectualism from, or their advice, or their morals. It's these Talmudic rabbis who like teach these people that, first off, they teach them that all of the goyim suck, but then they also give them this like paranoia and teach them that the goyim hate all of you and they want to kill you, so you have to stick with us, you have to like atrophy to us, otherwise the goyim are going to get you. You know, it's like they literally use fear propaganda on their own people to like corral them into certain mindsets. And you can see how like psychotic that lets off when these Jews react to things.
Where did that start? It's the Talmud?
I would say, well, it's hard because, you know, it was verbal before the Talmud was a thing, right? There was like oral laws that they passed down as traditions. And then it became like scripture to them, right? Like, this is the thing, is the Talmud is like, well, it's this law book that they carry with them to each civilization they go. And this is why they're reviled everywhere. Because, you know, you brought up the example of, like, other groups of people, right? Like, Vietnamese people coming into a country and, like, you know, the average Vietnamese... If, like, five Vietnamese people pull together, like, a conspiracy to take down the government, the other Vietnamese people are going to be like, whoa, like, I don't condone that. Like, they're fucking having sex with children and stuff. I don't condone what they're doing, you know? But with the Jews... because they have this rule book with them that tells them very certain things, their mindset towards it is different, right? Like the Vietnamese people that migrate to another country, they're not taking like a Vietnamese supremacy book with them, right? Where they're all studying that and going, oh yeah, all non-Vietnamese people are animals, you know what I mean? So there's like a different mindset coming into these civilizations as well. Yeah, it's hard to pinpoint the origins. But I think, you know, you look back at ancient Babylon, it was kind of the same thing. The Babylonians threw these people into captivity because they saw them as foreigners who were not worthy of being a part of civilization. And then they played the same game, right? They created their Sodom and Gomorrah, and they build up all these degenerate structures and things like that. And they ruin the moral level of society until the society around them collapses. It's like it's a survival instinct to, like, get themselves that leg up in societies.
Could it be so cultural? It started off as cultural, and it ingrained itself into the DNA, which becomes genetic.
Yeah, I think there's a little bit of that. You know, think about for example, finches. You're familiar with Darwin, yeah. and he did these studies of these finches on the Galapagos Islands, and like in a 10-50 mile radius. There's like eight different breeds of finches. Some of them have fat beaks, some of them have skinny beaks, some of them have like sharp beaks, right? And those with the different beak types actually won't breed with each other because they recognize each other as different. And those beaks, well, essentially they evolved based on the terrain and area that they lived in over time, right? So, for example, like certain finches lived only around like areas that have walnuts in them. So they needed the big fat beak in order to crack that walnut open. The other ones grew up where ants were the primary source of food. So they have the little skinny beak so they can, you know, peck into the wood and find an ant. So over time, like these things that would be considered like we're using like an animal sense, like a cultural thing for these birds to eat walnuts or eat ants, they became genetic structures. And I think that's what we're dealing with Jews, but actually on a psychological level, right? Where they have a psychology that is now genetically predisposed to them that other people can't understand. Like we really can't, again, just think of the example of doing something wrong in public, like, you know, having your pants ripped off or something. And like your reaction is to blush. Like that's a reaction they don't have. It's not ingrained into them to react like that.
That's crazy. I wonder what it is. They're just not embarrassed in front of the goyim. That's all it is. It's like, yeah, you guys are still fucking animals. Who cares? Like, how can you be embarrassed in front of a dog? in front of a fucking dog, right?
That's a funny way of putting it, right?
My dog, I'm not going to feel embarrassed. I'm going to be like, yeah, whatever, motherfucker. Like, you know?
Right, when you're a kid and your parents walk in, they catch you looking at a nudie magazine, your instant reaction is like, oh, God. But when your dog walks in, you're not like, oh, God, my dog, he's going to catch me, you know? That's a good point. That's actually a really good point.
So damn, man. So yeah, it seems like it seems cultural. It seems this is interesting, man. Where are the scientists at, man? I know a couple of biologists that we could get on the job here, but we gotta figure it out. They just lost funding from Elon, so. Yeah, man, this is crazy, man. So the whole Hitler thing, man. What did I want to talk about Hitler? So there's just so much about him. What do you think are the common misconceptions of Hitler?
There's a lot. So many. We could go one for one on this, actually. Okay. I think that'd be kind of fun. So I think the big one is that he was like this Nordic supremacist who thought that, you know, only German people deserved to live on Earth, and that he wanted to kill all these other groups of people. It's such an unbelievable misconception because it's not in any of his writings at all. Like, I've read Mein Kampf. I've read every speech you can think of. He never once is like, oh, yeah, we got to kill black people, or like, damn, those Mexicans need to get off Earth. Like, you never hear anything like that. And you know, the most flagrant he ever talks is against Jews specifically, and it's always based on their actions. Like, the assessments are always 100% correct, and he's not even, again, he's not advocating killing them. He's just saying that these people can't live with us anymore. It's not healthy. That, I think, would be my number one. Let's hear one from you. What's a misconception you know about Hitler?
I mean, yeah, I think all of that, man, like how I said in my last video, I put out like a video that it's more of like a parody, you know, but I'm talking to a client and it's like, man, you know, this guy was like this huge animal rights activist and whatever, right? He was a vegetarian, no? This is all accurate, right? I can't, correct me if I'm wrong, but from what I remember, he was a vegetarian. You know, he had all these peace treaties that he tried to reason with these people a million times, take your assets, go to Palestine, blah, and you know, you see other pictures with the fucking squirrel and the deer and the dogs, and you know, great guy. Even his best friend, the perfect girl, whatever, she was like this little Jewish girl and shit. It's just so many things, labor camps and maternity wards and the swimming pools and the like. How is that the guy that just was secretly exterminating millions and millions of people? It doesn't add up whatsoever, you know, and it just doesn't make sense. This guy was pro family. And he had all the right, from my understanding, right? Because obviously I wasn't there. I know America says all of this shit is propaganda, and everything you see good about him is total propaganda. The CIA blocked all this shit from us all these years and all shit. But I mean, you're talking about a guy that's incentivizing, you know, husband and wife relationships and children in the home, and you know, banned usury, and like, come on, you know, he's this animal guy. And how is that guy slaughtering babies? Like, right. Whether they're Jewish or not, I don't care what they are. If they're retarded, it doesn't matter what they are. Is he really just going to fucking burn gas them? I don't know, man. It doesn't, you know, you could read people's profiles a lot of the time, right? There's a dark side to everyone, I guess. But man, that profile, you know, if I'm a lead investigator on a case and I see this guy, I'm not tagging him to this crime. It doesn't make too much sense to me, but I'm not an expert, I guess.
No, I agree with you. You know, there's a very clear, you can tell when someone's not right, you know, when someone's like, even if they're like socially not well or behaviorally, you know, even when someone is like mildly on the spectrum, you can just pick up on it through their social cues and how they act with, even how they like carry themselves, you know, how their posture is or how they pick up a cup or how they, you know, move a chair. Like, you could just kind of see these things in people. And you just don't get that impression from Hitler at all. I mean, you see him in speeches. He's, you know, kindly, like, you know, pulling his suit down, making sure he looks good, you know, standing up with a nice posture. Even when you see, like, these photos and videos of him with children, like, there's such a difference between seeing him next to a child and seeing Biden next to a child, right? Like, Biden has this creepy fucking demeanor that's coming across, like, I don't know if I want my kid around that guy, you know what I mean? And then you see Hitler, and it's like this wholesome, like, like, it almost feels like he's looking at a kid of his own every time he looks at a child. You know, he just has this, like, love in his eyes. And not, like, this, you know, perverse kind of love, but this very spiritual, like, happy to see the youth kind of a thing. And that's a rare trait in anybody today. When do you see people that are, like, going out in public and they're like, oh, that baby's really cute? You don't see that as much as you used to. People used to really have that in them. Yeah, I think that's a good assessment. Hitler was certainly not this sociopath that they made him out to be. I mean, if he was, he would have to be literally the world's biggest sociopath that has ever existed to portray himself so well publicly all the time. Never have one slip up. Never one time did he, like, smack somebody and it was caught on camera or photo or something, right? Like, it's just nonsense. My favorite is that video where he's, I think he's at, like, the Olympics or something, but he's sitting in this, like, front row, and this woman comes up, and she's, like, so excited to see him. She leans in and kisses him on the cheek, and his reaction when you watch is the reaction of one of the most, like, stoic men that are out there. He just very kindly, he smiles, and he pushes his hand aside like that and goes, no, thank you, right? Like, you can't be more polite than that, right? Can you picture the average person reacting that way? Most of them are going to, like, smack her, or hell, they'll probably lean in to make out with her or something. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, he was definitely did not portray himself any negative light that you could really see. It's quite crazy.
What about the Jesse Owens thing, you know? The whole – it's like, man, everything – that's the funniest part that – like you said, there wasn't one slip up, right? If this was the character, then there would be tons of proofs of that, you know, to prove that character, tons of events that would prove that character. And so then one of them is, you know, the gassings or whatever. There's no evidence of that. The Jesse Owens thing. There's no evidence of that. You know, you could go on and on and on, and it's like, wait, so all of these were bullshit. Oh, the fucking blonde hair, blue eyed master race. No evidence of that. It's just ridiculous, man. Then you find out Judea declared war on Germany, and it's like, whoa, so they provoked this guy. Oh shit, he tried to give them peace treaties and Havara agreement and all these things, and you left that out of the story. It's like so many things that you have to leave out or add in order to paint this picture. So when you remove all of that, like I always tell somebody, if you're an investigator, right, and you're investigating a crime scene, I'm not an investigator, obviously. I just, you know, just logically speaking, right? You're going to show up to the crime scene and you're going to look at the blood is over here. This door is open. They, you know, let's check the camera footage. Just, you're going to put together all of these parts of the story to create the story, right? After the fact. Now, the Holocaust was a story just given to you without any of those facts, right? It's a story already created. They give you the story, and then once you deconstruct it, none of those facts exist. So it doesn't make sense. When you work your way backwards, it doesn't make any sense whatsoever. And that goes for his character. That goes for, unless, like, man, I don't know who I need to talk to, right? Because I've researched this shit pretty fucking deep. And I'm trying, you know, because if somebody is going to see this and be like, oh, this guy's an idiot, look at this and look at this, then I haven't seen it, man, because I've searched, bro. I haven't found shit yet. To me, the guy's like, shit, every speech I fucking hear, I'm like, God damn, I'll vote for this guy right now. You know, I'm not even German. I'll fucking vote for this guy right now. He's talking that shit here in America. You know, it's like, you know, incentivizing families, and like, it's exactly what we need today. So much of it is what we need today. And they're saying that this guy murdered so many. I don't know, man. It doesn't add up. And like I said, if anybody sees this after and disagrees and there's something I'm missing here, like, man, DM me, because I would love to see it, because doesn't it, you know?
Oh, I'm sure a couple of Jews will reach out with some concocted stories. yeah, about the masturbation machines and the electric floors.
That sounds like a hell of a time, bro. What the fuck?
Oh, my God. I've seen some of the craziest stories coming out of that. I saw one. Someone posted this clip on Twitter. I wish I saved it. It was this Jew claiming that he was chained to a wall and that they forced him to watch as they took two Jewish quadruple amputees and forced them to have sex with each other until death. I mean, these stories are, like, absurd. You, the thing is, once you actually look at the Holocaust from like an objective, out of, you know, out of framework point of view and say, okay, let me look at this and like, and actually kind of apply some logic to the situation, it becomes so fucking laughably absurd that anybody believes any of this shit. The soap bars, the lampshades, I mean, these have actually been proven to be false, right? But there's all these other stories that they're so ridiculous, they're not even worth proving false. It'd just be like a waste of time to even give credence to them by like, you know, trying to like look into them. The one Jew with the story about the Jew in the cage, they put a Jew in a cage with like a bear and an eagle or something. Like, dude, yes, the Nazis had bears on leashes.
Yeah, they had them trained.
Yeah, they're Jew hunting bears.
Kushner's grandma or something dug her way out of the fucking the camp or whatever with a spoon.
Oh, have you ever heard? Have you ever heard Anthony Blinken's? I think it was his grandfather's story about the Holocaust.
I don't think so.
Oh my god, it's the biggest bullshit. So he says he was in this little like sleeping quarters where all the Jews are supposed to sleep, and he was a janitor, and all these Jews were getting rounded up to go to the gas chamber, and as they're lining all these Jews up, he said he got down on the floor and put like he grabbed a bucket of water and like a thing of soap and started scrubbing around on the floor, right, and cleaning the floor up. And he says that the Nazis thought that he wasn't Jewish because he was cleaning, because he was doing manual labor. So he was able to sneak out and not get caught as a Jew. And that's how he escaped the Holocaust.
Wow.
And then his story is that when he escaped the Holocaust through that means, which is just absurd, you know, really hammering home on the stereotypes, by the way, that Jews don't do any manual labor. Yeah. The only time you can do manual labor is to save your life, right? So he says once he escaped the Holocaust, he was liberated. He ran for miles and miles, and he was liberated by a black guy in an American tank, a black tank commander. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, yeah.
There were no black people stationed over in Auschwitz rescuing Jews at that time. Like, it's so ridiculous.
Oh, shit, bro. The stories are amazing. It should, like, I actually have a video that I was working on, man. I actually got to get back to it. And it's just all the most ridiculous stories back to back to back. The lady that will swallow the diamonds and shit them out.
Yep.
And eat them again and shit them out. And she survived in there for I don't know how long with the fucking diamonds. The guy that he would get like 2x4 shoved in his ass. And like, come on, man. You know, like, are you serious, bro? It's just like, so then what? If you have all of these false stories, then which ones can you tell are true?
Yep.
How do we, oh, this one's true, that one's true, this one's true. Like, come on, man. Of course not, man. I was just reading about the Black Plague last night. And, you know, ChatGPT right away is like, oh, yeah, it's obviously bullshit. You know, there was confessions made, but they were coerced confessions. So, and it's like, oh, you mean like Nuremberg trials? You know, the double standard is just ridiculous, man. And the same thing is like we're gonna base this whole Holocaust off of eyewitness testimony, but not the Black Plague. You know, eyewitness testimony and confessions, but not the Black Plague. It's just ridiculous, bro. And until, you know, I heard Ben Shapiro talking to some fucking historian that was trying to debunk, I can't remember who it was. He was trying to debunk someone. And, bro, that guy spoke for, like, 2 hours and said absolutely nothing. Nothing. The entire fucking time. And one of my buddies, actually a smart guy, sends me this fucking video. And I'm just amazed the whole time that I've wasted 2 hours of my time and heard zero facts or zero debunking or anything. And this guy is supposed to be one of the top historians on the subject. So who do I got to go to? If this guy is saying absolutely nothing, who the fuck is going to say, who is going to tell me something? Because I haven't gotten there yet. I don't know if you know anyone. Because man, I've been looking, bro.
No, there isn't anyone. There's just a bunch of Jewish emotional lies. You know, there's a really good when Candace Owens first started getting into this whole thing. There's such a good prominent public example of this where she does this space where she's going to go talk about Zionism and reveal the truth about Zionism. She had like Dan Bilzerian and Andrew Tate on the space or something, and they made the worst mistake that you can possibly make. And so many people do this because they're under this notion of the good Jew, right? The mental like enigma of the good Jew, and so they bring up this fucking super Zionist, you know, crazy like batshit wild Jew. His name is Andrew Meyer. He is neurotic, to say the least, okay? Like, he has blocked me on Twitter and then unblocked me. Like, he called me a Nazi, he blocked me. Then, like, 4 days later, he unblocks me so he can read all my stuff again and keep calling me a Nazi. And then he reblocks me. Weird, weird individual, right? And they let this guy come up and just completely control the narrative. And that's the only reason he's there. You know, this is what Jews will do. They do this with mainstream politics. Of course, yep. They're going to do this when it comes to anti-Semitism. So he comes up and he starts just completely controlling the framework of the conversation. And now they're reading passages of the Talmud where it says that you can have sex with a 9-year-old and things like this. And this Jew goes, "Oh, that's, you're misinterpreting it. You know, this is numerology. It's not actually about a child." You know, like, really, you know, they'll create any kind of excuse in the book that they can. And again, it's the reason this works so well is that level of incapable of being embarrassed. So the average person, when they're caught in a lie like that, their reaction is to kind of get quiet or again, they'll get red in the face. And their reaction is just kind of like, oh, well, you know, and they start, you can hear them start to stutter in their voice and backtrack on what they were saying. You can catch them in the lie. You can't catch a Jew in a lie because they won't do those things. They don't have those, like, reactions of like, oh, he caught me, I'm going to stutter. It's like, oh, he caught me, I'm going to fucking double down. It's like, I'm going to double down and make it sound even crazier now, right? And people just, that's so foreign. If you don't really know Jews that well, especially like, you know, someone like you or myself, I didn't know any Jews growing up. I never met a Jew. I didn't hang out with Jews. I wasn't around like anybody that was Jewish that I knew of, at least at that time. And, you know, now that like I've studied these people and you watch all these videos of these rabbis like laughing about everybody else in the world dying off and laughing about bringing Muslims into Europe and raping and pillaging our countries, it's like, They don't operate like we do. Like, they're on a different like psychological framework, and until you understand that, it really is hard to actually understand how the level of like asinine kind of behavior that these people can put off. It's very weird.
Have you ever seen one that doesn't fit this description? It doesn't have those traits? Like, even a famous person or anyone?
First off, the fact that I have to think this hard is already damning for them. But I'm trying to be intellectually fair.
Yeah, I mean, the only person I could think of that seemed like a pretty decent guy, I like Mac Miller's music. I don't know if you ever heard Mac Miller. He was a good musician, man. Rapper, musician.
I'm familiar with the name. I wouldn't be familiar with his music.
I was Jewish. And man, he was very vulnerable. He seemed very in tune with, like, you know, emotions and shit like that. So it's kind of strange, you know, I guess, right? Like, if now that you're mentioning this, I'm just trying to, like, put it all together. And thinking back, if I've ever seen any Jew showing, like, this crazy compassion towards, like, regular people and shit, I don't know.
There also is the hard piece of how intermixed they are, right?
Yeah.
Like, you can get some Jews that actually – they look like a full-blooded Aryan after having, you know, so many generations of admixture in them. And this is the hardest part with Jews, where it's, unless they're like these purely Ashkenazi types, where it's so odd. You just look at them and the beady eyes and the pointy nose and all these different things. Like, you can tell, right? But some of them, you know, they're so racially ambiguous because what they've done historically is they come into a civilization and they start to interbreed with the collective, you know, populace, or a lot of times they'll try to marry into royalty. We literally see that today. Like, Trump's kids are all married to Jews. Biden's kids have either – they are now or were married to Jews in the past. So they marry into royalty. They have children with royalty, which automatically puts them into the power structure. It's like they – by the way, it's one of, like – No other group of people on Earth does this, but it is like one of the easiest ways to take over a civilization is to just have a couple decent-looking women go in and marry the royalty, and you're automatically in power just by default, right? It's pretty clever when you actually think about it, but no one else does that. It's very Jewish behavior. So there might be some of those Jews that don't have that same behavior type because they have such an admixture in them that the Jewish aspect is only maybe 25% or 20% or whatever. But the key is they always identify with that Jewish aspect. Like you said, you know, like you might talk to somebody who's like, oh, I found out I'm 25% Jewish. And like that seems to take precedence over like everything else. They might be like 25% German and French and Italian, but that little Jewish part, they're like, whoa, I'm Jewish, man. Like they get like excited about it or something. It's a weird thing. It's a weird phenomena with these people.
I would say the only two people that I could think of right now that have, I want to say it might be even 50%. They're not like Jewish at all. They act like very, you know, I mean, I'm trying to like put it all together now, like thinking back of all the years I've known these guys. And now I just found out recently, you know, after all this time talking about this. But yeah, I don't know. I don't think so, man. But, I don't think they grew up around with the same culture and stuff either. So I would say that does play a part in it. Maybe it's like an epigenetic thing. I'm not sure. It's interesting though, man. Now I want to like dive into it, but I've tried. But there's not many people that are researching this stuff, or it's just not out there at least.
There is some good stuff from like National Socialist Germany. They were writing a lot on Jews as like a genetic structure. You know, there's some, I could try to find a website or two and link them to you so you can research, but they had some really interesting studies that were coming out, and even just insights. Like you read some of these books where they're talking about Jewish behavior and Jewish, you know, traits and things like this, and like it's just spot on. That in itself is already, you know, you don't need like a scientific analysis when people 80 years ago were basically laying out exactly what we're seeing right now today. Clearly, like science isn't exactly needed for that one. I think the hypothetical does good enough. But yeah, there is some good work. Definitely not modern though. Maybe there's like two or three obscure authors that I'm not thinking of, but I don't think a lot of people are writing about that today.
Wonder why, man. You know, it's hateful. It's anti-Semitic. You'll probably get thrown out of the country for trying to investigate this.
Yeah, thing. Yeah. It's violent speech, right? It's egregious. Well, we're coming up on we got about like 25 minutes left on the show. Did you have any specific topics you wanted to bring up? Anything that you were interested in to discuss?
Man, we've covered a good amount. Let me think. I know there was one thing. I can't remember. Shit. I can't think of it, man. What do you think is going to happen with American politics, bro? What do you see happening? Think it's too far gone? You see, I mean, I'm seeing a lot of even like soldiers and people in the army and stuff kind of starting to go against this whole Israel occupation or whatever you want to call it of America. So, I mean, I've always said that I think that's where it starts, right? Like these are the people that are being used to enforce things on other countries and shit like that and fight these wars for Israel, basically. So if we could get some of those high ranking people to understand these things, like that guy that went viral yesterday, Iraq veteran or something like that. I saw him. He was like, holy shit, can somebody help me with this? Because I'm reading through the Talmud and I did not know that these people think this way of us. And, you know, his next tweet was like, oh my God, wow. Or, you know, it was like, he seemed like pretty mind blown. And I think those are good. I don't know if he's currently active or whatever, but I'm sure he has connections and he can spread the word and things like that. I'm sure it's happened before as well. But, like, what are the plans for this? What, you know, I hear a lot, right? And including myself, I talk about this a lot. But I think, is there anyone focusing on solutions? It's funny every time I say the word solution in this context, but Is there anyone really working on real solutions for this, or like anyone known, you know, with big influence, or I'm not sure. Or is it just straight awareness at this moment?
It's mostly awareness. I mean, I know of some people that are working on some things. The problem is it's so fragmented. So you'll have, you know, some people working on a small project here. You've got some people working on this project. There's no like unified collected effort that has like serious finance and power behind it, right?
Yeah.
You know, I know there's people that are working on like going against the current monetary system and trying to you know, break away from the current monetary system. And there's people that are trying to build like, you know, grassroots communities. There's people that are trying to actually get into politics and see if they can like change things on a local scale. And, you know, all of these things like in a vacuum are good. Right. But the problem is that without the mass on your side, those things are irrelevant. You can create a new financial system all you want, but if you can't get the whole masses to come along with it, what does it matter, right? It's like creating a brand new social media platform that's not Jewish-owned. Yeah, you could do that. I could do that right now. But if I only got 2,000 people on it, what's the point in having the damn thing? You know, you need it to be the town square like Twitter, where there's millions of people interacting on the platform every day. This is why we use Twitter, because we want to spread the message to more people. We don't want to speak to people who already know about it, you know, for the rest of our lives, like just like a bunch of old geezers like telling campfire stories with each other back and forth. So yes, I mean, I think they're being worked on, but they're not being done right, I guess would be my consensus, right? We look at, National Socialist Germany, like, dude, it's the National Socialism is the solution. It's the guy wrote a blueprint for us. He told us first off how to get to power. He told us how to remove these people out of your civilization. He taught us once you have your power in your civilization, how it should be run. You know, there's a lot of actual philosophy behind National Socialism. It's not just like, hey, this is like a political thing and we hate Jews, fuck you. It was more like there was some philosophy behind it, and they cared about true socialism, not this like, you know, Jewish version of socialism where it's just taking advantage of people, but like actual socialism that is good for society. It's social, it's good for people. I think National Socialism is the solution, but it has to be done in the same way they did it, right? You have to come to power. You have to build like a grassroots, mass populist movement that pulls all these people together, regardless of left or right, regardless of wealth or status or whatever, under kind of one large umbrella to actually collectivize against it. Because, again, you know, all of us individually knowing these things, it only goes so far.
So do you think that the web is just too tangled at this point? Because there's certain, you know, when I try to zoom out a little bit, I look at like Elon, for instance. You know, Elon is worth, what, $350 billion or something like that, if he can't fucking do it. But then if you think about, put yourself in his shoes, right? Like, let's say he did want to do it. His lawyers are Jewish, guaranteed. I'm sure his fucking doctors are Jewish. I'm sure his everyone he's doing business with is fucking Jewish. If so my thing is, it's so hard to battle these fuckers because, like we said, they prioritize each other, right, as a race over anyone else, right? So if you have the media, it's this one race. Then Hollywood is this one race. The music industry, you know, the banks, politics, all of these guys. It's all the influential powers of the world, of the country. Let's say you're Elon, and now Elon says, hey man, you know, there's some weird Jewish shit going on. It's like, oh yeah, all right, watch this. Boom, one media outlet puts out a story about Elon. Now the next one, whether it's left or right, it doesn't even matter, they're already bonded by this race. So now they team up, all of them, it's 90% of them, they all team up, whether the story is true or false. At the end of the day, that harsh, like, he's getting destroyed right now with a few things, but they could make it. They could turn it up a lot. They could pay people off to come up. Oh, he raped people. You could say whatever the fuck you want. You could literally, when you're in these positions of power, you could literally make things up, and it doesn't matter. You have judges. You have control. I tell people, man, like, you know, if I had $100 billion, I could walk into any store right now and just be like, hey, look, I want everybody here fired. And the manager's gonna come out and be like, nah, man, that's not gonna happen. It's like, all right, here's $10 million. Everybody's fired. whatever the number is, right? Let's just say whatever I'm willing to give, but you influence people with not that much money. So now imagine when you have all of these rich people that are acting as a unit, now you influence everything. It's like, how's one little ant going to stem out of that and like make any kind of change really? Trying to go against them, I guess, right? But then you work with them and you're getting stomped on. So I try to look at it all these angles and I just don't understand what the actual solution would be. I don't even know how Hitler, I don't know how prominent they were in Germany at the time. I know that they owned like, you know, the Hollywood of the time. They were in politics a little bit. You know, they had influence of bankers and things like that. But was it this bad? It was this bad? Or, well, I know the culture was worse, right? Like it was more fucked up. The, you know, inflation was worse. Unemployment was worse. All of that stuff was worse. You know, degeneracy was worse. But was their position, did they have the same, you know, strategic positions or as many strategic positions as they have now today here in America? Because right now it's like, it's fucking strategic, man. And it's very hard to like, you know, like you're fighting, getting hit from every angle here. So it's a little rough.
Yeah, I think they had, I would absolutely say they had the same strategic control over Germany. The only difference I think that we have today that wasn't present then is that they have this technology today, right, where they're using Google and all these things where they can monitor things a little bit easier than they probably had the ability to before. But they had the same level of control in relative nature to things, right? And this is kind of the key here is when you look at Hitler and all of these men who stood up to this, like Himmler, Goebbels, all the main people in that party, none of them were a part of the system. None of these guys were like, you know, rich billionaires or millionaires or huge politicians before they joined the National Socialist Party. They were all just like random casual civilians who were like, dude, my civilization's like collapsing around me and I want to fix that, right? And they kind of put their heads together and they built something from the ground up. And this is the key is, like you said, because they have these strategic positions, a guy like Elon, even if he wants to go after these people, he physically can't do it. He can't, maybe he can help, you know, push the needle a little bit on the rhetoric with us. But that's about it, because the second he does something that's outright anti-Jewish, they're going to do what they did to Kanye or what they do to anybody who talks about these things. Because if you're in that intertwined in the system, A, they need to get rid of you because, well, you have so much influence. And B, they have the ability to because they are already surrounding you with all of their claws that they have kind of dug in. But when you're like a grassroots person like myself, who's like, I don't have like a 9-to-5 in the system where like a Jewish manager can get pissed off at me. I probably haven't been to the doctor in like a decade. Like, I don't have a Jewish doctor. You know what I mean? I take care of myself outside of the system. I keep myself as far away from it as I possibly can. So this is a person that's harder to touch, right? All they can do is smear me, try to call me crazy or hateful, violent, right? Which is just absurd. So they have to use these like browbeating mechanisms to get people to ignore me, right? And then if that doesn't work, then they'll try to like throw you in prison or something or kill you or whatever. That's like the step by step, right? Those are the last two. But it has to come from outside of the system. Like, there's no way that you're going to be able to like vote your way into the Republican Party or sneak your way into the Republican Party and then change things from the inside. Again, you could do some things. You could probably like on a local level, you could probably get some legislation passed that's better for like your local state level, like with taxes or, you know, transgenderism or whatever. But when it comes to like the full blown getting things done federally on this like huge governmental level, you're not going to be able to sneak in and do that. They have way too much control over those institutions to be able to like sneak your head in there and do something wrong. So like, just as an example, like when we talk about these things and we say like there's a Jew behind this, 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 and that, people they'll level against you and say, well, the Secretary of Treasury right now, well, actually she is Jewish, but 5 years ago, they would have said the Secretary of Treasury right now isn't a Jew. Yeah, but it's somebody that the Jews allowed in there, right, that they know isn't going to be a threat or a problem for them. That's what people fail to understand. Is I'm not saying every single person doing this is Jewish, but it's Jews and people that are in connection with Jews, right? It, like, it's not a guy like me who's like, oh, I don't like Jews, and I'm running the secretary. None of those people that run those positions are anti-Semitic. None of those people dislike Jews, and certainly not publicly, even if they did privately. So it kind of defeats the purpose to say, oh, well, that guy's Irish, and he's in that spot. You know, like, yeah, we get it, but Jews control the majority.
Well, I mean, you do get the Thomas Massey's and shit involved every once in a while. And yeah. I mean, I am seeing, like, so there is more influential, more powerful people, I would say, are making it to these, like we said, with the technology. We all have this technology in our pocket, right? So it amplifies people's voices and influence as well. And that's why getting influence in truth communities, period, in all truth, right? In anything that people believe, it's important. But this one is a big one. This is the main one. But it's a big one. And we are seeing, you know, people that I disagree with often and people that I don't. You know, you have the Candace Owens, the Andrew Tates, Kanye's, Nick Fuentes, fucking, what's this guy? Steven Crowder. Now is actually, I saw that. I'm like, yo, this is huge, man, you know? The twins, the Hodge twins or Hodge twins or whatever. Ian Carroll making on Joe Rogan. Like, this is, Joe Rogan knows what's up, obviously. He's just, I'm sure he can't do what he wants to do. You know, you got fucking Daryl Cooper making it to Joe Rogan too. It's like, this is all fucking huge, man. So it does look like there's positioning happening, whether they're aware of it or not.
Yeah,
it's happening, and it's causing a mass influence of awareness, at least. But now, yeah, man, the battle's gonna be interesting. I'm with it, man. I'm with it. You know, I've been thinking lately, like, with these couple videos have gone, like, viral and shit, I'm like, I'm the outspoken guy. I don't give a fuck about nothing, you know? But then I start thinking, I'm like, all right, when would I know what's going on here, you know? When do I gotta, like, be on defense here? It's interesting. I jumped on the space yesterday, and I heard these guys, like, oh, yeah, they're fucking coming at me. I'm like, oh, shit, all right. So let me be with them. Oh, yeah. out of curiosity, have you ever experienced, like, some sort of attack from these people yet, or?
Sorry, dogs. They're
German command?
Pretty close, yeah, actually. So I personally have not gotten any attacks from these people, and I think, hey, enough. Part of it goes to my methods, right? So, for example, I'm around a lot of people who have been in this for, some of them less time than me, some of them a little bit more time than me, but they have these more, like, flamboyant, like, you know, aggressive kind of approaches to things, like, you know, screaming about it or like, you know, fuck all the kikes and all these different things. They kind of have a more aggressive approach. And this gives the Jews, like, a really easy attack vector, because all I have to do is, like, clip one little thing that they say, put it out of context, and say, oh, look, this guy's, like, a hateful neo-Nazi bigot. Like, ignore him. You know, he's crazy. But with someone like myself, who's a little more refined in my messaging, I try not to curse too much. I still do have a little bit of a trash mouth. I have to get better about that. But I'm never, like, calling for violence. I'm never, like, you know, really aggressive in my speech or in my tone. Actually, even just in my demeanor, right? I try to keep it more calm, like, relaxed. It's that cold German, like, logical side, right? We're very unemotional people, unfortunately. Well, fortunately and unfortunately. It can be good and bad. But I think for them to attack someone like myself, what it does is they can't attack me based on my image or the things I say. So they have to attack me on what I'm saying. And that creates a problem, because if what I'm saying is factual and they go, oh, this guy denied the Holocaust, or this guy said this and that, and then people go and they look at my stuff to go, you know, refute it or look negatively upon it, they might actually, like, hear me out for a second and go, wait a minute, that guy's kind of making some sense. He's saying something that actually lines up. Like, I don't know if I disagree with that. So it's harder for them to attack on a vector like that. And that's why strategy and approach is really important in how we do this stuff. Because when people see someone that's normal, for instance, I there's this lovely elderly woman. Her name is Monica Schaefer. She did this video called "Sorry, Mom, I Was Wrong About the Holocaust." And she plays the violin to start off the video. And she talks about...
Right? German lady.
Yeah, German, and she lives in Canada. Right. So she was arrested for this video. But the point is, when you look at that video, how do you look at that and go, oh, that woman's like a hateful psychopath. Like, she's out of her mind. You're like, first off, she displays that she is extremely sane because she can play the violin like no other. So that's not something an insane, crazy, like, you know, low IQ buffoon can do. And then she displays this, like, loving, kind, caring nature that just gets you to, like, question yourself. Because you've always been told, well, people that deny the Holocaust, they're like, you know, foaming at the mouth to kill people. They're madmen, right? But wait a minute, she's not that. So why is she denying it? You know, it gets the questions raising. And that's why, again, approach is really big. And kind of, I guess, to wrap us back to the initial point of the interview is why I took interest in what you're doing, because it's human. It's just human. Like, I'm working with this guy, we're talking, we might as well talk about something important rather than how's the fucking weather, brother? Like, because that's all that people talk about most, or how, oh, did you see that the Eagles won last night? You know, like that kind of shit. We need to have more in-depth, meaningful conversations if we want anything to actually change. So, well, that was a long-winded answer. But no, I have not received too much in attacks. I mean, you know, I get called anti-Semitic and all that dumb shit all the time, but it is what it is. I actually receive more attacks probably from our side than the Jews, to be quite honest. Because
you're not aggressive enough with it, right?
Yeah, in most cases.
Somebody was too much, bro. It's always a radical, you know? Yeah, it's interesting, man. I think it's happening though, man. It's looking good. I'm not crazy about getting, like, I don't look at Jews as a violent species, you know? So I don't get too threatened in that way. But I do, like you said about the whole, you know, it ties into like the no blushing thing, that is strategic, you know? So I was just curious about that. Yeah, man, I have these conversations with 100% of my clientele, bro. So, you know, at least out here in Miami, bro, it's happening over here. I don't know where everybody else is at, you know, but yeah, I was actually talking to, I had reached out to Jake Shields, like manager or something. I wanted to see if we could work on something too. But yeah, man, let's see, try to bring this together somehow, bro. If you ever need a haircut in Miami, bro, you come by over here too.
All right, I'll tell you what. If I'm ever down there, I'll certainly I'll take you up on it. Maybe I'll be the one preaching new facts to you about the Jews from the chair. All right, well, we'll definitely. If I'm ever down there, I will certainly let you know. We're coming up on the last 5 minutes or so, so I want to give you a chance to promote your stuff and kind of what you're doing in your area. So obviously, you've got your X account, which is The Base Barber. I want to recommend everybody, if you haven't already, go ahead and follow him. I just made a tweet on my Twitter with the post to the stream link and his clip, that the most viral clip that he had. You guys can follow him. He's tagged in that. Where else can they find you? If you want, you can promote your shop. I was going to say, I don't know if you want to do that. That might not be the wisest thing to do based on who might be listening. We got some ADL people sitting listening in the chat, so... yeah, you don't have to do that. I just wanted to let you know you could do it if you wanted to. But anything else that you want to promote that people can follow you on or check you out, check out what you're doing, please go ahead and let them know.
Yeah, pretty much just The Base Barber, man. I opened that page because I have another page called God Trip. And it's a little bit of conspiracy mixed with truth and art, multiple different layers to it. And then we started doing these clips with the conversations and stuff. And you know, people started DMing me a lot about those and to open a separate page for it. And once the one went viral here on Twitter, I got kicked off of TikTok and stuff like that. So when this one went viral on Twitter, I decided to open this page. This one seems to be doing better. So yeah, man, you can follow me there. You know, the clientele wise, I do get a lot of DMs of people wanting to come by and get a haircut. And, you know, sometimes I'll respond. Sometimes I just leave it there because as much as I want to, man, you know, hoping that people are real people that just want to come by and get haircuts, that'd be great. But first off, it's really hard, man. I'm like booked way ahead of time and it's hard to slide anyone in. And on top of that, you know, it's hard to trust who is, you know, authentic or not, you know. So as of right now, I'm not really interested in that at the moment. But, you know, maybe that changes, figure it out, get a bigger platform, figure it out. But as of right now, those two Twitter pages, I think, are the ones to follow me at, man. And you'll get a little bit different content on each one.
Okay, good, good. I want to see you open up a brand new barbershop in the future. Call it Auschwitz. And when the people come in, you de-louse them and do their hair up real good. Buzz cuts only. If you're Jewish, you come in, you get a free buzz cut. All right, man. Well, it was a pleasure to have you on. Thank you for hopping on and giving your background, your story a little bit here. It's always nice to talk to people of all different walks of life who are kind of picking up on these things. And again, I do want to remind the audience, give the guy a follow. Make sure that you're checking out the stuff he's doing. Share his clips around. They're good. They're good. The one got like, I think it was 3 or 4 million views on Twitter. It was doing really good. So make sure that you guys share his stuff around. And with that said, I think we'll close out here. Don't forget, guys, share my work around as well. Follow me on everything if you're not already. And as always, if you guys do want to financially support the show, options to do so are in the description below in the bio.site. You guys can support in many different avenues, whatever you're most comfortable with. And it's always appreciated. So thank you, folks, again for watching. Thank you, brother, for coming on for the show. And we'll see you guys on Friday at 4 p.m. Eastern. We're going to pick up on another Mein Kampf reading. So that should be a load of fun. All right. We'll see you guys then. Have a good night.
Good one, bro.
All right, brother. We are off.
Nice.